This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Guardian Football Weekly, the trudgery of the group stages of the Champions League. 28 goals in 8 games. We'll rank them worst to best. Well, we won't. But we will discuss the football. Wonderful game at Anfield. Liverpool fly out of the traps. Milan fans crying with joy at halftime. Jordan Henderson hammering one in to win in one of the groups of death. Manchester City just desperate for a centre forward. Score six, brackets six. Sebastian Haller scores four. I repeat, Sebastian Haller scores four. No win for PSG as they're held in Belgium, while Real get a late winner at Inter. And as Borussia Dortmund tweeted last night, Jude Bellingham very good at football. There's a Premier League preview, a bit of Serie A, some Kevin Keegan meat reaction, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Philippe Auclair. Bonjour, ça va?
Bonjour, ça va, Max, et toi?
Yes. Mark Langdon from the Racing Post. Welcome.
Hi, Max.
And hello, Nicky Bandini.
Hi, Max. It's been a very long time since I last saw you.
Yes,
at least 9 hours.
The Australian listeners to the pod, of which they are plentiful, will know that I've crowbarred as many pod people to sort of reflected glory. It makes the viewers think that I know about football. All I'm doing is getting Nicky or Lars, Philippe and Mark, you won't be far away from having your head put on a massive screen to tell us all about European football.
It is a massive screen.
It is, isn't
it? It's huge.
I thought you were brilliant, Nicky, is what I'd like to say.
Thank you. It's very
kind
to say.
And if you aren't in Australia... Oh, stop it. If you aren't in Australia, sorry for this self-indulgence beginning to the podcast. James says, is the Champions League group stage going to become an exciting spectacle this season just before UEFA ruin it? Barney Ronnie saying, part of the PR puff behind the European Super League, a wheeze the owners of these teams were so keen to embrace, was the sense these autumn games are a trudge, a schlep, cold product. Well, nobody seems to have told the players. Let's start at Anfield. Liverpool fighting back from 2-1 down. It was a brilliant game and it was a great comeback from Liverpool. But the moment for me was AC Milan scoring their second goal. And at halftime, Nicky, that Milan fan in tears at Anfield. It was such a beautiful thing to see.
Well, I think certainly as a match, to be an entertaining match, it needed that moment. Because the beginning of the match, we almost thought it wasn't going to be a match, didn't we? We thought it was going to be a total rollover because the way that Liverpool started, they came out of the blocks and Milan looked completely shell-shocked by it. And it was so fascinating for me because, you know, at the weekend I'd watched this same Milan team do, not quite as emphatically, but do a similar job to what Liverpool are doing to them against Lazio. So against Lazio, I thought it's going to be a big game. Lazio have made a good start under Maurizio Sarri. And Milan just assaulted them with this high press, never let them get any breathing room and eventually beat them 2-0. And they go to Anfield and the complete reverse happens. They are immediately on the back foot. They're immediately being squashed back and completely lose their composure. And it looks for a minute like this could be a total rout. Certainly you think if like Maignan doesn't save the penalty and the rebound that could have put Liverpool 2 up, this could have got really ugly. But the way that Milan eventually gathered themselves and look, go player for player through those teams. And Milan, they've made huge progress in the last couple of years, but they're not a roster, a squad that you can look at and say that's player for player as good as what Liverpool have. But they have some qualities and they found those qualities in the latter part of that second half. And they showed them with the direct running of Raphael, that sort of directness, that willingness to really play vertical football when they want to in possession and to do it really effectively with those young players, I think was thrilling. That response energized the game. The fan you're talking about, Max, we all saw on TV having a moment. I think it's just, remember that Milan are the Italian club who think of themselves as the European club. These fans, certainly he looked old enough to be of the generation, remembers the 90s, the early 2000s, when Milan were in European finals all the time, when Berlusconi was in charge, and frankly, was branding them as bigger than Italy. We're the club that goes and wins not just in Europe, but go and win the Club World Cup. And I think that identity has been taken away from Milan for almost a decade, 7 years outside the Champions League. So to come back to the Champions League and start at Anfield and to, against the odds at that moment, to have given that performance and come back and lead at half time felt really monumental to a lot of people who follow this club. In the end, it still didn't matter because Liverpool were the better team and deserved to win.
Yeah, I just sort of following on there from what Nicky was saying about the Salah goal. Just want to praise Divock Origi's sort of play within it, because he's somebody, a very strange player, really, because there are occasions when he really looks like he should not be part of that Liverpool team. There are sort of bits of build-up play that he's not of that level that you sort of expect, whether it's Jota or Firmino in that position. And yet he does come up with some really big moments for Liverpool and has done, throughout his time, even sort of going back to the Derby goal he got against Everton. There was the performance against Barcelona, the Champions League final goal. And for my sort of main concern for Liverpool this season, as I'm sure for most people, is whether they've got the depth of squad to be able to fight on all fronts. And yet, Klopp was able to rotate a fair few players for that game on Wednesday, and Liverpool still put in and for all that Milan played well, Liverpool put in an excellent performance themselves, deserved to win the game, and I think probably started the best of all of kind of that Premier League Big Four, if you like, so far this season.
13 shots in 15 minutes at the start. I mean, that's actually ridiculous. I mean, it's a sort of mad pinball, just constantly shooting. And like, it was like, as Nicky said, Milan's comeback was so against the run of play. We should praise Philippe Jordan Henderson, because that's not an easy skill. It's a brilliant, brilliant finish. I don't know who he was cupping his ears to. You sort of, it's very hard to tell who he could be angry with someone, or just one person said something, or he just loves Hulk Hogan. Who knows?
I have no idea about this one.
But it was
yeah.
a lovely finish, wasn't it?
Oh, it's a wonderful finish. And I was wondering, I don't have them at my fingertips, but do you have Jordan Henderson's goal-scoring statistics, Max?
I'll see what I can do. You carry
because,
on chatting.
Because obviously, to use an old cliche, but which I still use from time to time because I like it, is he's certainly not a great goal scorer, but he certainly can score some great goals. And this one was absolutely wonderful. And of course, the secret of it is that you have to make the ball bounce first to get the perfect speed and placement and everything. It's completely in control of everything from beginning to end. I'm actually pleased because Jordan Henderson has got quite a few critics on the continent in France, certainly people who don't like this kind of player. And if I'm looking at the notes that L'Équipe has given to the Liverpool players, I see that Jordan Henderson comes on top, which is, believe me, extremely unusual.
So the answer to Max's question was that Jordan Henderson was cupping his ear to L'Équipe. He was going,
yes,
on,
maybe
he
that was that.
4 goals for Sunderland, 1 goal for Coventry City. Who remembers Jordan Henderson's only goal when on loan for the Sky Blues in 2009? And 27 for Liverpool and 1 for England, which was that goal against Ukraine, wasn't it, in the Euros? That was, he was so happy about
Correct.
That after he missed a penalty. He also scored 4 for the under-21s. So, yeah, not a prolific goal scorer. Do you think, Philippe, because I thought that starting 11 was really interesting because, as Mark said, you know, they do have to rotate. And they, you know, is their squad good enough? You wondered if he'd underestimated AC Milan, but they won and it wasn't as comfortable as it could have been. But I thought it was an interesting starting 11 from Klopp.
Is that, I mean, I think the surprise for me was to see Divock Origi on the pitch. To be honest, the surprise was to see him in a Liverpool shirt still, because yeah. he's been announced on the way out of this club for longer than he's been at it, if you see what I mean. One of those is very strange. Yes, I mean, some decisions maybe... you can understand Mane, for example. That's not very surprising, because if you look at what Klopp has done in previous seasons in the Champions League, Mane has actually been one of the players that sometimes he would be rotating and he would do that quite regularly. So, but the fact that it is Origi who is taking his place is a bit surprising. The rest of the team, I suppose you're thinking of Joe Gomez coming into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think so.
Who
yeah.
didn't perhaps look as assured as he should have been, perhaps, at the end of this first half. I don't know, are we being a little bit too harsh on him here?
No, I wondered to myself whether or not those goals happen if Virgil van Dijk is in the side, especially the second one. I think Liverpool did sort of have a moment of disarray, but it was a moment, and it's just that thing, isn't it? And I think, actually, funnily enough, reading the Italian coverage this morning, that's sort of the same story that's being talked about with Henderson's goal in particular, is like, it was a moment of sort of brilliant attacking and a brilliant strike. But in the Champions League, you have to be ready for that. You have to be ready for, like, you show one moment of weakness and you get punished. And I suppose that's the difference with Gomez maybe and Van Dijk. In that moment, you think, would the defending be better if you've got your first choice on the pitch?
I mean, did it feel to you, Max, as it a bit after last season's disappointment in the Champions League, that it was a bit like normal service resumed at Anfield?
It felt like, to be hackneyed and cliched about it, a glorious European night at Anfield, didn't it?
Well,
it felt like it had absolutely everything. It's sort of, what if you wanted to, you know, do European night at Anfield by numbers, it sort of had everything you needed, didn't it? And frankly, you know, I'm all in favour of that. I really liked it. Klopp talking about Origi saying, sort of qualified compliment. People forget how good he is. It's difficult to get him in the team. We all thought in the summer offers would come. But clearly people do not watch football enough, is what he said, which is nobody wanted him. Anyway, also in that group...
We didn't mention Trent Alexander-Arnold. I just thought, like, look, again, I sort of course, see everything through my Italian lens, and I think that there were tactical decisions that Milan could have made better with how they lined up in that first half. But the first 30 minutes, it was all down that side by Alexander-Arnold and Salah, doubling up on Porteo Hernandez, who wasn't getting the support he could have had from Rafael Leao. But still, Alexander-Arnold was brilliant, I thought, in that opening pitch as well. So just wanted to make sure he gets mentioned.
Yes, and he has, and he'll be very pleased. He won't. He will not cup his ear to Football Weekly if he scores at the weekend. Also in this group, Atleti drew 0-0 with Porto. Porto had a goal disallowed with 10 minutes to go. Medo Taremi latched onto a poor back pass, sort of bundled the ball past Jan Oblak. It sort of brushed his hand. I felt, Mark, it wasn't fair, although it probably is fair. Is that how I should conclude?
I think that's a good assessment, really, where I wanted the goal to stand because it felt like it should have done, but I expected it to be ruled out. And I think if you're the defending team in that situation, you would, you know, you'd be going mad if it was given. So I think that it was the right call. It was unlucky, and I think that Porto actually were the better team in this game, created more of the chances, and you know, if they're the weakest team in this group, then I suspect that all of the matches in this section are going to be well worth watching.
Conceição, the Porto head coach, he said the referees were the worst team in the game, so we know how he feels. Yes, Philippe?
Just to mention the fact that I think one point of interest in this Atletico game was the way that the crowd would react to Antoine Griezmann coming on. And I'm happy to report that he came on at the 75th minute and his reception was quite warm. So I'm happy for Antoine.
Okay, that's good. Group A, Manchester City 6, RB Leipzig 3. Man City scoring 6 goals in a Champions League game for the third time in less than 3 years. 5 different City players scored a goal. It felt, Mark, to me like a sort of game of 5-a-side. It was just sort of, every time I looked at it, and you've got all the games happening at the same time, you're thinking, it's just a lot of goals. This is just a silly number of goals.
Yeah, I mean, I was designated this game to watch for the pod, and it had like a bit of a friendly vibe to it. I know that after the game, Pep Guardiola had referenced the fact that it wasn't a packed house by any means at the Etihad, and there was just that vibe of, it didn't feel maybe as big a game as the one that was sort of at Merseyside at the same time, because there was a real relaxed attitude to City's defending, which always causes them problems when they do that, because, you know, it's the intensity of their press that sort of protects the defence, and if they're a little bit off that, then they do give away chances. But I think it was a bit like the Bayern game against Barcelona, where City kind of knew that they could score goals and create them at will, and so that they were maybe sloppy in other areas of their game. Certainly going forward, De Bruyne showed few signs of rustiness and was kind of back up to the speed that you expect of him. Was Grealish, you want him, I think, for 100 million to be able to score more goals, and we are seeing him really drive into the penalty area. I think that is something that Pep Guardiola will work with him to kind of, you know, to do more inside the penalty area and to sort of cause those moments. And it was a fantastic goal. And we almost take City for granted now that we're going to get that kind of performance from them. And it was quite an easy 6-3, if that sort of makes sense. It wasn't even a great game. I didn't even feel like it was a fantastic game of football. It was right. It was just kind of just goals happened, and it was a bit sloppy, I thought, from City. But that just goes to show how good they are, that they can play in that manner and still beat a decent Leipzig team so easily.
Do you think, Mark, it's like football was in the 60s? There are all these 6-3s, but actually it was all rubbish.
Philippe?
Yeah. I think we should spare a thought for Christopher Nkunku.
Of course.
Because, you know, you score three very good goals, two headers and a shot past Ederson, and your team is beaten by three clear goals. I mean, it's a bit sad for him, but he had a wonderful performance, and you could say he was perhaps he was certainly the best player on the pitch, I would say.
Yeah, he's only the fourth player to score a Champions League hat-trick and lose. Brazilian Ronaldo, Gareth Bale, obviously, at the San Siro, and Irfan Kvaratskhelia. Late kickoff does say, can you imagine scoring a Champions League hat-trick away from home and having to be sad about it? What's the biggest achievement you've had to be sad about? That's a great question. We should mention Jack Grealish, because his goal was... But he said, the past few weeks, I couldn't wait for this game with the music and everything. It was so nice. I love that players love the music as well. And that goal, Philippe, was just beautiful, wasn't it?
It was absolutely glorious. And the gloriousness of it is, well, the way he drives with the ball at his feet is just magnificent, which probably has to do with the size of his calves as well. It's the relationship in shape between the ball and the calves. And then the jink to the right, and the perfect combination with this glorious curled shot. And you felt it's one of those you felt it had something Robin-y about it, because you knew it was going to happen, it was going to go in. So, yes, absolutely wonderful. And just confirms what, you know, we all thought that basically is fitting in that team, like a hand in a glove that's been made to measure, basically.
It's sort of the opposite side to what, you know, you see Messi do so often for Barcelona. We haven't seen him do it yet for Paris, although he did hit the bar with sort of one of those shots. But there was kind of that vibe to it where he just glided past the opponents. And Leipzig are not the best defensively, but I still thought it was a brilliant, brilliant goal.
My favourite moment, of course, and the best goal of the game, Mark, was Mukiele's own goal, because it was absolutely sensational. Like, technically, to head it back where it comes from, it's not as good as Ian Dowie, v Stockport, of course, but it was that kind of, you know, what was he doing?
Max, I thought he was going to mention when the referee trips up Kevin De Bruyne for one of the Leipzig goals.
Oh, I'd missed that bit.
Yes, but, do you know what? I have a certain amount of sympathy there on the own goal. It was on UK TV. They were calling it calamitous and all the Keystone Cops defending. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do there, really, when De Bruyne puts in a ball of that quality. Jack Grealish is behind you.
No, come on.
I mean, you have to get... So what do you want? Do you want him to leave it in that situation? I mean, it's come off... He's tried to head it, I assume, behind, and it's come off his head slightly differently, but... I also think that
it was 50p. It's a 50p head, isn't it? I think there are better places for him to head it. Is all I think.
I have a certain amount of sympathy there, because I think the ball in is so good and the pressure is so is okay. intense from City that you are, you know, you're put under a lot of pressure there to deal with a delivery that, you know, De Bruyne does, but not many others can sort of put it the way that he does in such dangerous positions.
Michael says, should City fans listen to Pep and start turning up to their games? After the game, he said, we scored 16 goals in the last three games here. I'd like more people to come on Saturday. We will be tired. Southampton are so dangerous. Well, come on, Pep. I invite all our people to come 3 p.m. to watch our game. It's quite surprising, given. I mean, that is a sort of quote that will make sort of Manchester United Twitter explode with GIFs of, I don't know, no, I don't know how to do a GIF, but, you know, if I did and I was a Manchester United fan and I was 19, I would be sending some GIFs right now. It's a strange thing to say, don't you think, Philly?
Yes. Well, yes, but is there anything new about the fact that there is a disaffection from the Manchester City fan base with the Champions League and with European competition as a whole?
No, but he's saying be there on Saturday against Southampton.
Yeah, that's what is strange about it, because there will be back for... I mean, there will be more people for the game against Southampton than there was for the game against RB Leipzig, which is quite crazy, really. I suppose it's what Nicky is... It was talking about is that, you know, you get a bit bored by excellence after a while. Where's the excitement?
Yet we all still turn up and do the pod.
There's also the other side of this, which is if you want people to come that much, make the ticket prices the price where they come, because I'm certain that you could find a price point in the Woodfield stands.
I think with this game, they were on some sort of discount voucher websites for the game. So that it maybe wasn't as expensive as what it could be, but I mean, you know, if you've got a season ticket, you know, that might be your kind of limit, or at least until you know, you get to February time when you think, well, we've got the knockout stages and maybe you want to go to an away game or whatever. So I mean, it looks, I suppose, worse because the other English teams sort of do pack out their stadiums and the Champions League nights do feel a little bit bigger at maybe somewhere like Anfield, but you know, people have only got so much money, I suppose.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll begin with PSG's draw in Bruges. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Also in Man City and Leipzig's group, Club Bruges and PSG, they drew 1-1. Are we about to read far too much into PSG failing to win a game? Ryan says, I've often made the mistake in fantasy football of front-loading my team with star strikers and then having nothing at the back because the budget wouldn't allow. Given PSG have no budget limitations, how do they explain themselves? Ander Herrera scored quite a lot of goals so far this season. But Hans Vanaken scored a deserved equaliser before the break. Philippe, what do you make of this?
I thought it was a fascinating game. To start with, because of Club Brugge, absolutely magnificent performance. They were honestly, I don't know, if I were a fan of this team, I'd be so proud. I'd be really buzzing, as they say. And they were buzzing. And there was none of the respect that some other people might give. Because to be honest, I'm so bloody fed up with the circus that surrounds MNM and the media, including on British television, actually, where they kept talking about it when they had in front of them the Belgian champion playing perhaps the best game they have ever played under Philippe Clement, with some massive performances, I'll use the word massive for once, from a couple of players and none more than Charles de Cattelera, who is just one of those players like Camavinga. It was the first time I saw him properly, and I'm just completely in love with that player. He's going
to be magnificent. Can you tell us about him? Can you tell us, because there will be a lot of people listening to this who have never heard that name before, I imagine.
Well, I'm not surprised. He's only 20 years old. I think he recently made his debut for the Belgian national team. He's a club product. He was actually a very gifted tennis player. Our friend Christophe Terra actually sent me some YouTube clips because I was raving about him on WhatsApp with Christophe. And he said, well, look at him play tennis when he was 6 or 7. My God! And he's a striker. He's quite... It looks actually the wrong shape for the type of striker, but technically astonishing. The weight of passing, the quality of control, He perhaps is not quite the finisher that he will be, but he can learn that. That's not a problem. And he's one of those players, honestly, who makes you jump out of your seat for some of the things that he does. The vision, the ability to keep the ball with his back to the central defender and so forth, which, you know, we're talking about Professor Kimpembe here. We're not talking about, a bad defender at all. And he was magnificent, but so was Lang, so was Van Aken, so was this whole team, to be honest. And interestingly enough, or not interestingly, or not surprisingly enough, in France, L'Equipe has got, front page is a picture of the of Eminem with ghost-like as a headline. By the way, Kylian Mbappé got injured. He's got a twisted ankle. Nobody knows if it's serious or not yet. Ah, and 5 pages about the game, and no mention of Bruges. The only mention of Bruges is like a very short quotes piece of Philippe Clément saying, you know, I'm very proud of my players, blah, blah, blah. End of story. That's it. The rest is about this PSG team, which was, yes, ghost-like. And the fact that their best player was Keylor Navas. Without him, they would have lost. They would have lost without Keylor Navas. And they would have deserved to lose. And it's no news for anyone, because it's unbalanced. And actually, the word that Mauricio Pochettino used after the game. But we all knew it was going to be unbalanced if you've got a front line of Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe. Your midfield is going to be overrun all the time. You're going to lose every single 50-50. It's obvious. But that's what they chose to do. And good luck to them.
Mark first, then Nicky.
Pochettino just feels like one of the worst managers possible, really, for the team that he's got. In Paris, because he wants to be this process manager who's very aggressive without the ball. This is what we've seen with Espanyol, Southampton and Tottenham. I think likes working with younger players that he thinks he can improve and will listen to him, and that sort of ideology that he really gets a buzz off as well, I think. And now he's got a team that just is nowhere near that kind of his own identity. And I think it's really interesting to see if he can make that work or whether he just becomes unhappy and just disenchanted with what's going on there. It feels like you shouldn't be upset to have the quality that he's got, but he just doesn't feel like the right manager. He almost want sort of like a Carlo Ancelotti type in there, I think, that kind of somebody that maybe doesn't necessarily spend sort of 10 hours on the training ground every day, sort of, but is able to provide a platform where he gets star players to perform and feel very comfortable. So I think it's really an interesting sort of part of Pochettino, I suppose, managerial sort of improvement, if he's got that in him to be able to coach in a different way, or if he does need a certain group of players that's very different to the ones he's got at the moment.
I just think like it's not actually a new conversation, is it? Because this is really the same story as Real Madrid in the early 2000s Galactico period. You sort of start building something, and at the beginning it's like, wow, we spent a lot of money and things are working, and then a certain indulgence can step in. I think about that sort of moment when Real Madrid said, we don't need Claude Makélélé, who was actually sort of crucial to letting everything in front of him get away with it because of what he did in front of the defence, and off he goes. And they said goodbye to Del Bosque and they brought in Carlos Queiroz, and suddenly they weren't. There was fourth in La Liga, I think, all of a sudden from having won the league. And then you end up having to make appointments exactly like Mark's just named, like Ancelotti. You sort of need that sort of someone who knows how to nuance and finesse with the sort of personalities and get the best out of them. And you still, maybe even with those managers, you get certain results. Ancelotti obviously got them back on top in Europe. But there were significant chunks of time when Madrid were pouring money after these Galacticos when they weren't actually winning the trophies everyone thought they would. And I think there's always been this sort of ease in football with which we get caught up in, look at these big names, look at the shiny players. When actually, since the beginning of the game, you've always needed some sort of balance in your team.
How does this play out, Philly? I mean, if does Pochettino have to win the Champions League this season? I mean, he has to win Ligue 1, surely. I mean, I can't.
He didn't.
What if he doesn't win Ligue 1 again? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
No, he didn't last time. I know. That's the point. Poor old Pochettino. He's such a good manager. What if he doesn't win that? I'll be bereft.
I think you. There will. Yeah, you'll be bereft. Yeah, you will be bereft. Well, no, I think there's. I mean, they have extended this contract because he was on a very short contract to start with, Pochettino, and so they've extended in July the contract to 2023. So there should be, which basically in terms of how safe he is means absolutely nothing, because if they want to get rid of him, they will get rid of him. And yes, obviously, all the comments are going to be, I mean, with this kind of players, you cannot afford to lose. I mean, this is a ridiculous situation. I was wondering if you were talking about Ancelotti, if Zidane might be the ideal manager for this type of players, because also they might shut up, you know, when they see him alive, because you don't question Zinedine Zidane. Do you? Neither the player nor the manager.
I think that's so fascinating, isn't it? I think that's so fascinating, isn't it? Because I think with all of these personality players like Zidane, like players who've been such a big sort of influence in the world, I do think you're absolutely right. Like even sort of the biggest stars have a little bit of that sort of built-in, oh, we grew up in awe of this guy moment. But I also think that even with players like that or personalities like that, there comes a tipping point. Maybe they get older and the players who are there are slightly less connected than they used to be, but there comes a tipping point. And I don't think that aura lasts forever. I don't know how long it lasts, and you might well be right that Zidane would be perfect right now, but I'm fascinated by that dynamic because it doesn't last forever.
Are we at the Zidane tipping point? And is the tipping point of managers one of those massive Ben Shepherd tipping point machines where all these amazing, amazing international footballers are just being pushed back and forth and Zinedine Zidane is there. And at some point he just gets nudged by a younger, a younger best ever footballer and he gets nudged down like he did to Platini or Socrates and suddenly they just fall down the chute. But they don't come out the bottom. You've heard them go down, but you can't find them and then they've suddenly disappeared from all football. Or perhaps
I
not.
Think you
I
found the
anyway,
theme of your stream of consciousness novel here.
If someone could design that machine, I'd definitely play on it. A couple more groups to get through. Borussia Dortmund won 2-1 in Istanbul against Beşiktaş. And as I said in the intro, Borussia Dortmund tweeted, Jude Bellingham, very good at football. And he is very good at football, Philippe, isn't he?
He was absolutely magnificent. And I use the word magnificent because there is magnificence about the way I think his posture on the pitch. He is, it's not statuesque because a statue doesn't move very much. But if a statue could move, it would move like Jude Bellingham. And he was simply magnificent. He was the best player on the pitch. And he's going to be a key man for England for the next 15 years. And I think it's just obvious. It's just like in front of you, you think, wow, this is a very, very, very special player indeed. And it's an opinion. I think people were thinking about him like this in Dortmund already. They're thinking about him like this in Germany. And I think they're now thinking this way everywhere. And to anyone who's seen that particular game, he was magnificent.
He was so, so good. And there's another thing going on with Dortmund. And I don't know if this is just a thing that like I get swept up in that is not as as interesting to other people. I mean, he's playing alongside another very, very good young player in Erling Haaland. And clearly the dynamic between them, the understanding between them on the pitch is very strong. But you see it in the interaction off the pitch as well. But they're two mates playing football. They're two mates playing football. And I think that dynamic, when you find those sort of personal interactions that are football interactions, because they understand each other very, very well. And I thought that Haaland's goal, you could see, again, another player than Bellingham would have just taken it on himself, frankly, because he could have done the way he was had the defence absolutely on their heels. He could have done whatever he wanted, frankly. But the way that they look to each other and then the way that they look for each other in the moments, even when they're larking around in interviews afterwards, when they are celebrating together. I find those sorts of dynamics so beautiful. I think that's what football is at its best, is those moments of joy being shared, whether that's the joy of celebrating the goal or actually the joy of creating the goal, the joy of being in sync with someone and making those movements together. I think it was, yeah. obviously I watch this team sometimes, but I don't get to watch them every week, and seeing them do that in the Champions League is just it's really fun.
I slightly feared for Bellingham when he went to chest celebrate with Haaland. So that's quite a powerful chest to sort of fend off, isn't it? Because you could bruise a rib quite easily. What happens? I mean, obviously we expect Haaland to go at the end of this season, Mark. Dortmund are quite good at keeping players for as long as they want to sometimes. What do you think?
Yeah, no, they have a succession plan. Yeah, they have a plan usually, Max, that, you know, I think Ousmane Dembele was slightly different because they weren't expecting that bid to come from Barcelona, and it only arrived because Neymar was, you know, had gone to Paris. But I think that they kind of, almost when they kind of buy them, they're already thinking about developing them, making the profit on them, and then who comes in to kind of replace them. And I suspect that Haaland will be the one that goes in the summer, and then they'll probably keep Bellingham for at least one more year after that, and sort of look to sell one at a time. You know, it would be a lot, as they found with sort of Haaland this summer. They lost Sancho. They didn't want to lose two members of that attack, and I think it will be the same next time around. Of course, there is a World Cup as well, where I expect by sort of then, about 15 months away, I would expect, you know, Bellingham to be in the England team by then. I know you like the Rice-Phillips combination, Max, but he'll have to break that up for Bellingham somewhere along the line. And then I would imagine sort of in that summer, maybe Bellingham will have his choice of just all of those rich Premier League teams, and it's a case of which one he wants to go to.
He could go to Bayern. Following a well-trodden path from Dortmund to Munich. His contract runs until 2025, by the way, so, and his value is only going to increase, so they're not going to sell him straight away.
Let's go to Sporting Lisbon versus Ajax. Lee says, should PSG have signed Sebastian Haller instead of Lionel Messi? 4 goals, two inside the first 9 minutes. He only scored 10 in total for West Ham. He's only the second Ajax player to ever score a Champions League hat-trick after Jari Litmanen at Ferencvaros in September 95. Litmanen, what a player he was. Squawk of football. Sebastian Haller's had more shots on target in the Champions League this evening than Messi, Neymar and Mbappe combined, and he scored with every single one. What a lovely day for him, Mark.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was a lovely day for me as well, Max, because I've taken quite a lot of stick off of West Ham supporters. When he arrived, you know, on sort of all the pods and radio, you know, you're asked about these players that maybe aren't particularly well known to the British audience. And I was really positive on the influence that Haller would have on the Hammers. And, you know, he just wasn't. Even when it was going badly, I was sort of blaming everyone else around him. Oh, he's isolated up front and, you know, he's not doing this and he's not getting the help. And then Antonio goes and plays up front and just makes it look so simple for that West Ham team. And Haller, just for whatever reason, and it happens, doesn't it? You know, not everybody settles at a club or in a country, but he'd done really well in Germany and deserved that kind of big money move. And so I'm surprised he got the 4 goals, but I'm not that surprised he's doing well for Ajax. And I think they maybe play a bit sort of more like Eintracht Frankfurt in terms of the getting up support towards him. You know, somebody like Antony set up a couple of the goals, and you know, he does need that. When he was in Germany, he had obviously Rebic and Luka Jovic alongside him, and you know, he is kind of that burly target man that needs support and runs off him. And maybe the way that Ajax do get those players around him maybe suits a little bit better. A chastening experience though for Sporting, who you know, defended really well in their title success of last season. They knew it was going to be tough in the Champions League, but I don't think they expected to get hammered at home to Ajax on match day one, that's for sure.
In Group D, Sheriff Tiraspol beat Shakhtar Donetsk 2-0. Adama Traore scored the opening goal from Sheriff from a Cristiano assist. Ross says, with A. Traore, not that one, scoring with an assist from Cristiano, not that one, for FC Sheriff, can the gang think of some other bootleg Panda Cola footballers? Does anyone have one?
First one that popped into my head was Ronaldo Vieira, who's in Italy at the moment. I think it was Verona last season, sort of back at Sampdoria. He played for England under 21s, but with a name like that, he really, you know, the pressure's on to deliver at some stage.
It's when Championship Manager runs out, you know, you run out of seasons. And then you start inventing. I had Ken Weggerly, who scored absolutely. And I had Ken Weggerly and Roger Miller, but M-I-L-L-E-R, for Hales Owen in the Premier League. Championship Manager, they were my best days. Championship Manager 93. Philippe, your hand was up with probably something more important.
Well, no, there is. I mean, I think one of the most magnificent is Michel Platini. Not the one who played for France, but the one who played for CSK Sofia, Ludogorets and Dinamo Bucharest. Who is obviously Brazilian, he has to be, and he's had long and distinguished career, well, not so distinguished career, and he's still playing at the age of 38 for Gamma. Now, don't ask me anything about Gamma, because I've got absolutely no idea what Gamma is up to these days, but he's gone back to Brazil, but he's still playing, and Michel Platini, yes.
Does he have plans to go into football administration?
I think I think it might be a clever move, actually, by the other Michel Platini to have Michel Platini, the Brazilian, deputizing for him, perhaps in some circumstances. Your Honour.
One more game. Inter nil, Real Madrid 1. It was a really late goal from Rodrigo. The assist from Camavinga, that cushioned volley. Actually, it was a bit like the assist for Bellingham's goal. For Dortmund, that sort of, to control that volleyed pass is so difficult. Ancelotti on Camavinga, he's very young but has a lot of quality. We have to be patient with him so that he has the opportunity to progress well. He has to improve in the defensive aspect, and he will in the future.
Yep.
Some cliches from Carlo there, but what did you make of this for Inter's start?
It's a very disappointing start for Inter for how the game went. Inter were very much in the ascendancy for the first half and the front half of the second half as well. It was only really in the last bit of the game when perhaps Simone Inzaghi got his substitutions wrong. He took off Lautaro Martinez, he took off Ivan Perisic, they started to sit back a little bit. Meanwhile, Carlo Ancelotti sent on Camavinga, sent on Rodrigo, those two players combined for the goal. But really, Inter, do you know, when I first watched it, I felt like Courtois was having an absolutely monstrous game. When I rewatched the highlights, I thought, actually, none of these saves is as special as I thought it was. Mm. It's just that Inter's finishing isn't very good. But Inter did have three or four absolutely clear-cut, should-score chances in this game and should have been at least ahead. So definitely a frustrating start for Inter. And they've now gone, I think it's 5 home group stage games without a win, and there's something just in the air for them on these European nights that things will never quite sit under different managers now, and there's a frustration about that. Obviously, Shakhtar losing in the group as well means it's probably a bit more open than people imagined it was going to be, but I think the way that the game went, there's a real sense of disappointment from Inter. They felt like this was one they should have got at the very least a draw from and probably should have won.
All right then, that'll do for part two. Part three, Premier League preview, any other business, and the news that Nottingham Forest have sacked their manager, Chris Hughton. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. So yeah, Nottingham Forest have sacked Chris Hughton, which is a shame because he's a really delightfully lovely man. It wasn't working for him though. They lost 2-0 at home to Middlesbrough. They're bottom of the Championship, 1 point from their opening 7. Their worst start in 108 years. He'd only been in the job since October last year. The club, in their statement, would like to place on record its appreciation for Chris's efforts. Chris joined the club in a difficult period for everyone in football and around the world. We thank him for the way he's conducted himself during his tenure. I'd quite like to make a book of club statements when they sack a manager. And they'd all be the same, wouldn't they? Stephen Reid will take temporary charge of the first team. Hopefully he'll just coach every player to hammer free kicks like Stephen Reid could. Anyway, there are 13 games without a league win stretching back to April the 5th. The turnover of managers at the City Ground in recent seasons has been high, including caretakers, interim coaches, 20 different managers in the past 10 years. 21, including Stephen Reid. That mark is not, it's not the succession planning of Borussia Dortmund, is it?
It's not. No, they've had some issues with their managers in recent times as well, but not quite to Nottingham Forest's sort of standards. I mean, Chris Hughton is somebody that was sort of seen as, you know, a banker really for the Championship. You know, he knows that level and would kind of bring about stability and results. And it's not an easy job off the pitch, but I think, as you just called out the results there, I mean, he hasn't done well enough on the pitch to have been given any longer, I don't think.
No. Philippe, you wanted to talk about this biennial FIFA World Cup idea, didn't you? You've been doing some talking. You've been doing some journalism, Philippe.
Yeah, I've been doing some journalism. I wasn't alone, but there was a briefing organised by FIFPro, which is basically the players' union, the global players' union, with their general secretary, Jonas Beer-Hoffmann, who's been in place for about a year and a half. And it was very interesting because the aim was to speak, was to talk about the reform of the calendar. And there are two things that he said, which I think are worth quoting. And these are on the record quotes, by the way, just for our friends in the legal department. The first thing that he said, that the next 6 to 12 months would be extremely tense because of the debate or non-debate on the periodicity of the World Cup. And that, in fact, he said that should a proper process not be put in place, he could see football coming to a breaking point. This is the word he actually used, breaking point. And he also said that he was all the more worried that he couldn't see any sign of real leadership at the moment, which, you know, are tough words. But there's another other thing he said, which I thought really resonated with me. I think will resonate with many fans as well. He said that if FIFA and the others, but if FIFA in particular, was devoting as much time, energy, imagination as it is at the moment to try and revolutionize the calendar and the competitions, if he was putting as much effort into addressing all the problems in the game, such as racism, such as equality, such as the imbalance between the lesser markets and the bigger markets, we would have done an awful lot more progress over the last few years than we have at this point, which I think is a very, very fair point. And one which we should also remember as journalists when we talk about it, because when we talk about the World Cup every 2 years and we obsess about it and actually push it top of the agenda, well, we're not helping for the other subjects that perhaps we should be just as interested in.
Just to play devil's advocate, presumably, you know, that if FIFA don't want it, they have to talk tough at the start. That's sort of what a head of a union would do.
Yeah, even if they were prepared. To be honest, you know, there is... It's not saying that, you know, FIFA and people within FIFA and people like Arsene Wenger have every right to, if they want to put an idea forward, that's fine. But you have every right as well to say that it's, as, you know, Brian Glanville said of Sepp Blatter, he has 10 ideas a day, 11 of them bad. And this is the 12th, basically.
CONCACAF. And the Asian Football Federation, the AFC, have confirmed they're open to the idea of a biennial World Cup. UEFA and CONMEBOL, the South American Football Federation, have criticised the proposal. Gianni Infantino said, "We're consulting players and clubs from all over the world, as well as FIFA's 211 member associations and fans," he says. "They have an equal right to be listened to. This is about democracy. We respect all voices." When asked about the potential global result, head of Global Development Arsene Wenger said, "If people have better ideas, I'm open to it. I welcome every idea that's better than mine." Here's one, Arsene. Don't have a World Cup every 2 years, mate.
What we should do? If you want to involve the fans, you know, maybe Gianni could do what he does. He has got his Legends team. You know, we've got these players who follow him everywhere. They were in Doha recently. And when he wants to promote one of his ideas, you know, he puts, here's a bit of Cahill. Here's a bit of Schmeichel, here's a bit of this, here's a bit of that. And they all basically are saying the things that the guy in the back would like them to say. So why doesn't he do the same thing with a fans legend team? You would take fans, FIFA would select like 15 fans, and then jet them around the world in 5-star hotels. And actually, why isn't there a journalist as well, legends? And I'm a candidate for it.
Oh, you're in. Philippe's in.
I'm in.
Philippe, you're so easily bought.
Then I would betray And after really enjoying my stay in this Bojel Arab and being served the most exquisite lamb I ever served to mankind.
Do you know what, Philippe?
Sipping fresh pomegranate juice and all these things, I would then turn against the hand that had fed me. And I would disappear in a blaze of glory, never Philippe, to talk about football again.
Do you know what I think? I think if you did that, I would feel more let down than if my dad rang me and said, I'm not actually your dad. Do you know what I mean? That's the level it would be. I believe, like, you can't.
No, of course not.
Well, you know, everyone's got a price. Anyway, I believe you'll stay on the side of good. Not that there's necessarily a good side in this. We're very balanced here. In the Premier League this weekend, Spurs-Chelsea probably the big game on Sunday, as well as Manchester United's trip to West Ham. 2 o'clock on Sunday, that one as well. And Newcastle Leeds, it might be fun on Friday night. We'll obviously look back at all the games on Monday. Nicky in Serie A, the big game Juve-Milan, yeah?
Yeah, and it's a big one. Of course, this is only the fourth round of fixtures, but still, Juventus have not won a game yet in the league since Max Allegri came back. They did beat Malmo in the Champions League this week, but 1 point from three games is not the start everyone was hoping for. Meanwhile, Milan have made a perfect start, three wins from three games. So it's too early to talk about crises, but certainly if Juventus were to lose this game, you'd be looking at some pretty big questions being asked. And I think it'll be a real test of Milan as well, because you see how much they put into that game at Anfield, which was a lot for a young team. And I think now to come back straight away to one of the biggest games in the domestic calendar, that's going to be a real sort of test of where they're at as well under Stefano Pioli. So big game in Italy this weekend.
And just also the games perhaps to follow this weekend, Max, there's a PSG against Lyon on Sunday night at 7:45, and obviously everybody in France is going to have a look at how PSG reacts after this very disappointing draw against Bruges.
Carlton Palmer news. He is now the manager of Northern Premier League side Grantham Town. On Tuesday night, they played Ashton United. Palmer named himself on the bench. We're not sure why he did. He didn't come on in the 2-2 draw, but that would have been lovely to see. Wouldn't he? Reaction to the Kevin Keegan meat chat, which I know you enjoyed, Mark, on the last pod. If you haven't listened to that,
I'm still thinking about Philippe's lamb, to be honest, Max. Now, I mean, so we've 2 days we've had Kevin Keegan's meat cuts, and now Philippe's lamb. It's my kind of pod.
How do you feel about the pomegranate juice? Is that also on the Mark Landon menu, or is that going to sit twice?
It's not, Nicky. I thought that Philippe was going to say the finest glass of champagne. I was a bit disappointed when...
at the Bojel Arab, that might have been a bit more difficult.
Yeah, that's true.
But very Philippe's lamb, that's I like the sound of it.
Good player, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he
was a good player.
Matt says, if Kevin Keegan's hosting the British Meat Industry Award, should Bernard Matthews do the Ballon d'Or? I don't believe Bernard is still with us, but a lovely idea. I don't think you can do a weekend at Bernie's style Ballon d'Or with Bernard Matthews, can you?
I'll put my bosses at France Football.
On a golf cart, yeah. Someone picking up his arm and waving. Oh, that's slightly bleak. Will says, Kevin vegan. I look forward to a time when Keegan goes vegan. His family could single-handedly save the farming industry, filling the void of fruit and veg pickers, reinventing picking methods. When asked about his favourite vegetable, he says, that's easy. I like my greens. And we were discussing, Sid was saying when he hears Upamecano, he wants to get it into Oops Upside Your Head, which doesn't work at all. Meep Vroom says, if you and the lads want a song for Upamecano, it's got to be Rocking All Over the World by Status Quo. Here we go, Diet Upamecano. Okay, I can sort of see that. Kieran says, I can't hear the name of Upamecano without my brain putting it to the tune of Club Tropicana. And now you won't either. Upamecano, drinks are free. Okay, fine. That's enough singing. People actually get paid to sing. Philippe, you do. I should have made you do them, didn't I? And we'll finish on this parental advisory note from Smethwick, who says, good shout out to Bruce Hornsby on the latest pod. I know him and his family. And what an incredible musician he is. What he can do with a keyboard is otherworldly. He also does a great Cockney accent and is the only American I know who knows how to properly say and use the word wanker. So thank you, Smethwick. Seems a perfect way to finish the pod. I apologise. Really lowered the tone this late.
There was I think it was that word. There was when Wayne Rooney left Manchester United, there was a famous American website that used later, followed by that word, Rooney leaves as their headline. Which I remember thinking, do they know what that word means?
I like that you're too polite to say it, even though we have just said it. You know, it's out there. We've said
it's
it.
Out
I
there.
Apologize. It's not a word for broadcasting, is it? You know. So my apologies, but it's happened now. And that'll do for today's podcast. Philippe, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Max.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Nikki.
Can I get away with one cheeky plug before I sign off?
I think you're going to just say, can I just finish the pod and say a swear word? Sorry. You can do whatever you like, Nikki.
I didn't want it to be the last thing in the whole podcast, but yes, I'm certain whenever I come on here, some people are very bored to hear me talking about Italian football. I'm sorry to Liverpool fans at the beginning of this show when I came straight in talking about Milan rather than Liverpool. But for those of you who do like the Italian football chat, I have got a brand new podcast out, Serie A Chronicles. You can find it on Twitter, or if you even just find me on Twitter, it's in my bio and I've got a pinned post. But new Serie A podcast, independent podcast with me and Mina Rizzucchi. So if you are into that sort of thing, do come along and give us a listen.
If you don't listen, we will all be very disappointed. All right. Do you want to plug anything, Mark? You got any other rival podcasts you want to plug?
It's not a rival. It's a complimentary podcast.
No, Max, I'm all good.
Okay. Philippe, anything?
No, I have nothing to plug at the moment, but thanks for the offer. I won't forget it.
That's okay. Well, it's all right. You're in the, you're just drinking from the trough now, aren't you? Look at you already.
Yeah.
Somebody has arrived with a golden hat and put it on your head. And there you are already in the FIFA mansions, aren't you, Philippe? We all knew it would happen one day. We all feared it. And today was the day. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.